What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Run Your Mouth podcast. We are here loaded with topics, zero nonsense for you guys, because I got out most of my nonsense talk last week, did local shows this weekend. Nothing really irritated me. I sat around a whole bunch and, sometimes you don't have anything to complain about and then you can just get right into the news. Guys, a couple dates to plug real quick right up front. And that is in Brooklyn on Mother's Day. So, come to my thing before you go visit your mother or after you visit with your mother. Going to stack it with some of my favorite comics in New York City. It's the only New York City date I will be putting together probably all the way until next year. It's in Brooklyn at a comedy club I like to work. I feel very comfortable in. So come hang out if you're in the New York City area. Other than that, gigs to promote. First Porch Tour date. I will have that ticket link up. We could complain about that. I'm trying to find a new ticket service and whatever. Listen, we're not complaining this episode. We're going to get into the news. We're going to have Kyle on. We're going to talk about Iran. And then I'm going to go sit through a Passover Seder. I gotta store all of my good energy so that I can sit through that thing. But anyways, Porch Tour date's coming soon. All right, we can get into the news. I got nothing to bullshit about. Let's start with the fact that out in Colombia, they had to shut down classes because you got all these Palestinian protesters coming. And I'm just rooting for the situation to get bad enough that, maybe all the kids in that school, they do something to remove the Palestinians and then start complaining that they were occupying the college and that they were justified to have them removed. All right, guys, I need 1 second here. I got a little tech error. Hopefully you guys can actually hear me. I'd like to recommend maybe to some of these kids in college, just listen. You got a lot of professors and they're teaching you all sorts of topics and you get a whole education. And so I just want to advocate care a little bit less about other people. You're in college. You've got a golden opportunity. You're in Colombia. You know how you honor your parents and yourself and the talents that you have by just working hard and making something of yourself. You're sitting in protesting in the hallways because you feel so bad that you actually have an opportunity to go enjoy and live your life. You're not helping the situation out in Palestine. You know, you honor other people that have to live miserable lives is by going and just doing the best that you can do with what you have. And then maybe creating value for other people or giving some charity along the way. But just care a little bit less about other people. That's my recommendation. Just take the opportunity that you have. Don't feel bad about the fact that you have an opportunity. Show up to class every day, which isn't something that I did. So, I'm not. But then again, my college years were bad years. I spent 5 years failing a lot of classes and not even doing drugs, having fun or partying, just being a crazy, miserable person. So I'm trying to teach you how to not live like me. And part of that is to spend less time caring about other individuals. And instead of protesting, just enjoy the fact that you're at Columbia. That's pretty cool. All right, let's take a couple of comments here. Instead of protesting, these youths just fight. Yes, we can hear you. Thank you. Hopefully there are no tunnels under Columbia. That's an excellent point, Big Biz. John, is this the only play to catch the live or are you on Rumble 2? I might be on Rumble 2. I definitely set up at one point to go to Rumble. Didn't seem to be getting a ton of engagement over there and it might have unlinked itself, but I think I definitely exist on Odyssey. It exists on Twitch, but I never set up the channel for this stuff to remain on that channel. And then, of course, I got my own back system live stream, which we'll be pivoting more to in the near future. Volunteer at the damn soup kitchen or something if you feel bad. That's not a bad idea. Robbie, want to do some porch tunneling in Lynchburg, PA? Underground porch tour? By the way, we're going to be doing a bunch in Virginia. I got to get the dates up soon. I don't know if Lynchburg will fit in, but I like the name of the town. Sounds like an exciting town. And yes, if someone's got the means for tunneling, I would love to do some tunneling. That seems like a useful skill. And I feel like if the terrorists out in Gaza have gotten that good at it, maybe it's something that we could all start doing as hobbyists. All right. Next up, man sets himself on fire outside Trump trial in New York. And my first thought was it would suck to get put out. Can you imagine you actually decide you're going to set yourself on fire? You go ahead, you do set yourself on fire, and some dude is actually quick enough with the fire hydrant that he puts you out just so you have to learn live the rest of your days as a burn victim. They should make a law that if some guy decides that he is going to set himself on fire, that you let the guy burn. Have some courtesy. If a guy has so much mental illness that he gets to that stage, because that's got to be one of the worst ways to go. There's ways that you can go that, you know, are somewhat pleasant. If you're going to don't check out early. I'm not advocating for checking out early. I'm just saying if a guy's going to check out early and he's going to do it in this horrible way, unless you're going to put him out with fentanyl so that he can, instead of having to burn alive, can just experience like a heroin overdose on the way out. You know, okay. Then the other thing I was thinking, and this is why, you know, don't check out by burning yourself alive, is can you imagine if you forgot? Because this is what I would do, is I would bring the important pamphlet and then I would end up holding it while I was on fire, which that's got to be when your last thought is, ah, fuck, I forgot to put down the pamphlet. Now no one's even going to know why I did this. You know, you think you have the most important information to save all of humanity. And this is why, you know how I was telling those college kids a minute ago that they should care less about other people? Also, don't have opinions. And don't think that you're wildly right. As a person who spends 2 days a week and then does other podcasts, and I have a lot of opinions, let me tell you, opinions aren't that lucrative. And, you know, just don't be too married to them that you think they're so important that you have to show up to a place and set yourself on fire because people need to know your opinions. Your opinions are not that valuable. And that's why for all you people who want to like start a podcast, it's tough to get eyeballs on this stuff. Don't lose your mind thinking that you're important or that your opinions are of value. So listen, everybody, as it's the Passover holiday and we're on the brink of all these wars, world wars all over the place, here's some information that leads to peace. Care less about other people and don't think your opinions are that important. And don't start getting into content production. You know, someone's going to tell you, listen, as a side hustle, maybe you should start a blog, or maybe you would enjoy yourself if you started ranting on the internet. Maybe you could be one of these TikTok people who sits in the car, sets up a camera, and just yells your opinions into the camera. And then the next thing you know, you start thinking that your opinions are really important. You think you're onto something, and you're like, how come no one's listening to this shit? And then you start really losing your mind because you think people need to have these things because you have filtered. You've got an antenna. You read all these things about how the ideas are just floating in the universe. And it's just a function of getting your antenna and filtering what the universe is trying to put through you. And you're like, these were really good ideas. Now I just need a way for people to actually see it. And then you start going to crazy places. So I'm just letting everyone know, don't start the blog, don't have opinions, and don't care about other people. And so, firstly, off the bat, this guy should have stuck to making signs. He's pretty good at making signs. He's pretty good at growing hair, and he's pretty good at making signs. I don't know that much about this guy who, if you guys didn't see the news story for some reason, there was a guy who decided to set himself on fire outside of the Donald Trump court cases. He knew that the camera was going to be there. He knew that there was going to be some publicity. And he's got dude, this is an A-plus sign. Trump is with Biden, and they're about to fascist coup us. I'm interested. I see a sign like that, I'm like, I feel like this guy knows something. And by the way, you know, if you were going to burn yourself, you could have donated your hair to me. There's people in need. That would have made an excellent wig. And so then at first, by the way, when I saw this headline, I didn't care. I was like, there's crazy people in the universe. Crazy people are going to do crazy things. This is not I don't think there's going to be a massive problem of more people burning themselves on fire. And I'm like, that's the worst way to try and get your ideas shared. I don't care. But then I saw an opinion piece that says it doesn't matter why that man lit himself on fire in New York. And then all of a sudden I was like, well, now I'm interested. What did this guy have to say that the internet's telling me not to look at what he had to say? And luckily for Twitter, I didn't even have to do that much research about what he had to say. I had to just put it out there. Hey, I'm interested. And then all of a sudden, everyone starts telling me what the guy had to say. They start sending me the links. So I go over to his blog. And off the bat, guy's not as good of a writer as Ted Kaczynski. I mean, you talk about people that do terrible things to get their word out there. At least that guy, I don't agree with him. Didn't agree with his methods. He had some interesting points that at least if you're on your farm, you're doing farmable land, you feel like you're doing something of value, you can turn around and feel like an important human being. Whereas when we're all in this digital universe, working in cubicles, office spaces, very removed from final products, you never get to feel a satisfaction for your lifestyle. But then this guy, he started off and you're like, this is some interesting shit, where he goes, Ponzi schemes, we're all cryptos, one big Ponzi scheme. I started reading it. I was like, man, I'm going to sell out of my Bitcoin. Forget everything Guy Swan ever said. Forget the Bitcoin standard. This guy lit himself on fire. He knows what the elites are trying to do, create the last greatest Ponzi scheme of all time, filter all the money to themselves and collapse the thing, create a ticking time bomb that takes down the entire financial system with it. You got me listening. And then he doesn't really have much. He starts talking about the Simpsons and how the Simpsons conditioned us for propaganda. And then it just became a little bit more cartoonish as it went. And I kind of checked out. And of course, you know what they're going to be saying is this is why you got to be careful with the conspiracies. And I already told you, you don't have to be careful with the conspiracies. Conspiracies are safe. They're a good time on the internet. That's not what leads to this. It's having the opinions. It's starting the blogs. It's thinking you're important, caring about other people. That's the kind of stuff that will lead you to crazy behavior like this. So let's not try and get them to go, hey, listen, this is why we can't have the internet. This is why we got to shut things down. This is why you can't share your opinions. And this is why you can't get into conspiracies, because there's other things I can point to that can lead to this. One is don't dress like you're joining a barbershop quartet. That's a bad idea. That could lead you to insanity. Or here's another one. Don't be suing the Clinton Foundation. That, by the way, you want to talk about things with the high statistical probability of maybe resulting in lighting yourself on fire. If we're going to compare conspiracy theories with trying to have lawsuits against the Clinton Foundation, I'm just saying, if we're trying to explore what behaviors you probably need to be careful to avoid in order to not find yourself in a situation where you're lighting yourself on fire, suing the Clinton Foundation is probably one of them. And then, guy's not a terrible writer. I like that. The true history of the world, Haunted Carnival Edition. Not bad. All right, before we go to our next topic, let's give a quick plug to YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo, long-term sponsor of the Run Your Mouth podcast. And if you're into Kratom products, you're not going to find them anywhere other than YoKratom.com. I've been taking some little Red Bank dot pills, maybe a little too often, but they're a good time. YoKratom.com, home of the $6 kilo. Now, before we get into the next topic, and, I wish we had a whole support staff here, and I wouldn't have to do things like this, but I did forget to send the link to my guest, so I'm just going to talk out loud. I'm going to stall for a second here. Maybe within the chat, you guys can entertain yourself. Maybe you guys have topics that you would like to talk about. But give me just a moment here while I send this link to Mr. Kyle, who will be joining us in a moment, because I do have some Iran questions. This stalling moment brought to you by YoKratom.com, home of this $60 kilo. All right, and we're back. Let's see what's going on in the comment section. Dude who set himself on fire called George Carlin a secret fascist. David Allen, I was on the fence about it, but he convinced me with fire activism. Point, I give credit, David. That's a good one. I'm now convinced everyone is nuts. Y2K was fun, but 2012 Planet X was peak conspiracy theory. And then lastly, are birds real? Discuss. We're not going to get into that one. All right. Next topic I wanted to discuss was Mr. Peter Higgs. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Peter Higgs. But Peter Higgs, I came across his obituary today. He was the inventor or discovered the God particle. And at first I saw this, I was like, the God particle. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go on a rant about how nobody knows anything about anything, that at the core of all of science is something called the God particle, right? That we exist on this planet. And you can go through your entire scientific procedures, but at some point you can't answer for a Big Bang. You can't answer for why matter has mass. And therefore, that's why the opinions are overrated, why college kids shouldn't care about other people. Because at the end of the day, no one actually knows anything about anything. And then I was like, "What? You know what? With that said, I don't even know what the God particle is." And then I looked into it, and apparently he wanted to call it the God damn it particle because it was so difficult to discover. And then I started reading about what the God particle is, that amongst these atoms, you got your protons, you got the neurons, and then in order for the matter to have the mass, you need to have this God particle that they discovered with the Hadron Collider that can actually, and then I remembered, I don't give a shit about science. Not only did I realize I don't give a shit about science, that little part in my brain that I forgot that existed from school started just screaming at me of, I am bored, get me out of here, get me out of here, why are you doing this to me? I don't want to know this information, it does nothing for me. And then I remembered, like, going back to the point about not having opinions, how much of a dummy I am on most topics that come to anything other than the news and me being annoyed when people are lying to me. That's all I'm good at, is that I watch the news and I go, holy fuck, these assholes are fucking lying to me. And then I yell to you that these people are lying to me. But then you give me like actual real information that I got to read through. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not I don't know anything. OK. Now, I did label the episode something to do with women, because there were a bunch of women topics that came across my desk. First is Nikki Haley. Does this not look like she just participated in a photo op with her husband? That's, she got a call and she's like, ah, shit, I got to go down to the military base. Like, she looked at her calendar of shit that she had to do and she's like, fuck, I got to show up and take a picture with my husband and pretend. How many days are you in town for? Can you go back in your boat? What, I really got to go down there? By the way, for those of you guys that don't know, Nikki Haley, after her failed political campaign, she's got some new job at a think tank where I'm sure they'll come back with studies that go, yep, you should be in that war for the dignity of the American people. We should be fighting that war too. Oh, guys, look, we sat around at the think tank, came back with another report, and here's another war that we should all be in. The next one that I came across was you had Michelle Obama, and she decided to go to Target. She decided to go to Target. She's got a new book out, and she decided she's going to go on a secret mission to Target. And what she discovered on the secret mission to Target is that she's not that famous. Apparently, nobody knows who Michelle Obama is. You would think one of the biggest celebrities on the planet, she makes a big stink out of this. And we're going to watch this in a second. She sits around with the Secret Service. And now you got to figure if she's actually going into the Target. You got the camera crew and you got the Secret Service. People would start being like, who's this person? And then either the Secret Service crew threatened everyone beforehand where they're like, pretend like you don't know who this person is. And that it's also a lady. Maybe that's what happened. And so this is pure trickery for the camera, that it appears like no one actually knows who Michelle Obama is. But here is Michelle Obama visiting Target, signing her own books. Not one person knows who she is.
We are on a mission. It's a secret mission. I had the crazy idea. I heard my paperback is out and it's in Target. So we are going to...
Can we add to the rumor that not only is she a dude, but that she's actually the kid from... the Little Rascals who was sitting in the car with the I got two pickles. Tell me that's not this kid.
Go undercover because I have not seen my book actually in a Target store. So we're going to try to do this low key. Let's see how it goes. Here it is.
Here we are. It's me. Should I do a reading here?
Look, she's so convinced that she's interesting and anyone cares.
Okay, I'm gonna sign a few. Kind of surreal.
We all know nobody reads these books. This is the way the elites get paid. They hire some ghostwriter to write some book so that they can funnel some money through a Penguin publishing house and give these people giant paychecks.
There's six signed books here at the Target in St. Louis. There's baskets. Can we
want to get one?
All right. Not only does no one come up and say anything to her, even the person at the shopping register is just wondering, why is there a film camera here? Who is this dude that I am talking to? Nobody knows who Michelle Obama is. All right. And then also, I was thinking about this for a lady who tries to pretend that she actually, because this is my favorite conspiracy, is the fact that Michelle Obama is actually Michael Obama. I have no proof of this. She seems to be a lady, but I just think it's the funniest conspiracy theory. And why would you make your book becoming Michelle Obama? Did you start as something else that you had to be cut? Like, is that not a secret message right in the book title that maybe you started off as something else? And then I didn't do a better Photoshop on this, but Michelle Obama, the light we carry. And then we had this NPR thing, but we can get back to that. Why not invite our guest onto the show and get into some of the hard hitting facts about what's going on between Israel and Iran and the latest. Oh, sorry. Hold on 1 second. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Kyle. What's going on, dude?
Doing well, Robbie. Happy to be back on.
Excellent. All right. So here's why I was like, all right, I'm going to have to dig into this and I got to get Mr. Kyle back on the show. I was doing a lot of coverage last week on what I was calling the war theater between Israel and Iran, of what's appeared to me to be coordinated strikes between the two countries. It seemed to me, well, we'll start with this because I was really just talking some nonsense, but the Iran strike off the bat, it seemed like, I don't know who's at the elite table that actually gets to sit down in the intelligence agencies of America, because there was reporting that there was, you know, back channel talks about what the strike was going to happen. But I concocted in my head that Iran literally calls someone at the CIA and goes, hey, can we do this without you guys getting pissed off at us? And they basically go, yeah, as long as it's that, our defense systems are built for that. Go ahead. Am I overplaying, like, just how coordinated these things are? Or in your head, is that basically the way it goes down as well?
No, Robbie, I heard you give your analysis on part of the problem. And I thought to myself, oh, that's actually pretty close. So, you know, what happened here was Israel bombed an Iranian consulate building in Damascus, Syria, and killed 7 Iranian officials plus 9 Syrians who either worked for Iran or were nearby. And so this was a pretty major offense as far as what countries see as aggression towards one another. A consulate is viewed as your sovereign territory. And so that's why for years and years, Assange was able to, you know, while there was an arrest warrant for him in the UK, to sit at the Ecuadorian embassy in London, and the British police, you know, just waited outside for him to come out. Basically, it wasn't until the Ecuadorian government took a bribe from Washington and agreed to expel him from the embassy did the Brits then go in and arrest Assange. And so, you know, it was with permission of Ecuador that they did this, even though we're talking about a building that I believe is in downtown London. And so, you know, these consulate buildings and all this stuff is supposed to be, you know, considered sovereign Iranian territory. And therefore, Israel would be going very far to bomb it. And that's what they did on April 1st. And so everybody was anticipating an Iranian response. And, you know, after a week or so, I guess Iran settled on their response. And they told several Arab countries, including Turkey, which is a NATO member state, so a formal treaty ally of the United States. And the United States then pressed Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE for details on the attack, in which, you know, they gave apparently all or most of the details of what Iran was planning to do. And so, you know, a lot of ways you're right. This is a lot of theater between Israel and Iran.
All right. So this brings me to kind of my next question was, I guess, my antenna or radar is very attuned to, hey, I think these people are lying to me. And that's kind of when I start investigating topics or getting interested in topics. I think that's a lot of why I was so invested in the COVID topic, was I just get annoyed when people are lying to me. And that's kind of all I do on this show is I go, hey, here's why I think that this is a load of bullshit. And I would say over the last 4 months, there's been quite a few instances with Israel where things happen. And I go, I think they're lying to me. And that's why my opinion has shifted quite a bit on this topic. And sure, maybe there's other tragedies going on in the world, and I'm a little bit too focused on that one versus some of the other ones. But that's because I kind of work off of the media and I work off the information that you put in front of me. And if you're lying to me, I'm going to go, hey, I think this is a bunch of lies. All right. So now I'm wondering if I've gone too far with an anti-Israel attitude, and maybe I have a stupid analysis here, because I look at the situation with Iran and I wonder if Iran actually is a mortal enemy that has a long-term goal of wiping Israel off the face of the planet, and that perhaps Israel is actually working in its best interest and that they've got the intelligence. Iran, is it mortal enemy? It will wipe it off the map. And if it doesn't take actions now to prevent them from getting a nuclear bomb or coming into the modern world, anything that it does to advance its civilization will only be tools that will actually exist to kill Israel. So I turn it to you. Does Iran actually have an interest in Israel? Like, is there an agenda in Iran to destroy Israel, or are they just reactive to Israel and kind of trying to protect themselves?
Yeah, there's not an agenda in Iran to actually destroy Israel. Now, Iran has a lot of interest in the Middle East that do compete with Israel. And so I don't want to portray it as the Ayatollah and the Iranian president Ibrahim Raisi are just sitting there all day long thinking, well, what can we do to get along better with the Israelis, or something like that? You know, there are competing interests. And again, you know, it's not like there isn't confrontation. It's not like Iran doesn't have influence and doesn't help arm and supply Hezbollah, who has been in a low intensity war with Israel for the past couple of months. So I'm not here to say that, you know, Iran is completely innocent or has nothing to do with the situation. But a lot of what Iran does throughout the Middle East that puts it in conflict with Israel and the United States is look to combat radical Sunni insurgency. And so when you look at the Iranian presence in Syria and why they have such a large and extensive presence there, it's because ISIS and Al-Qaeda almost overthrew Bashar al-Assad, which would have endangered all the minority groups, not just the Shia, not just the Alawite, not just the Druze, but all the minority groups, including the Christians in Syria. That's why the Syrian Christians like Bashar al-Assad versus ISIS, is because, you know, while there's not extensive freedom in Syria under Assad, you also don't get purged off the face of the earth for being the wrong religion. And there's some protection of you and your minority religion in Syria. And so, you know, they like that. And when you look at Iraq, it's the same thing, where Iran bat the Shia militias there. They find themselves allied with the U.S. actually in defeating ISIS. But throughout the Middle East, including in Yemen, there's groups of Iranians, the Houthis, that Iran bats against Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, AQAP. And so Iran does have a lot of interest in the region, and at times it puts it in conflict with Israel and the U.S. And Robbie?
Okay, on that of it being in conflict with Israel and the U.S., let's maybe hone in on what that conflict is, because one of the things that I found very interesting this past week was there was chatter that, I guess, if war actually did break out with Iran, maybe this was nonsense talk as well, but that it would drastically affect, I guess, U.S. oil prices. Because even though while we think Iran, you know, is largely not able to trade freely with the world, I guess they are able to sell their oil to places such as China. And so it still does mean that there's more oil available. Like, there's actually more supply of oil versus if they were completely isolated. And so as a result, I guess that there still is an increased supply. If you were to completely, I guess, go to war with them and remove that from the market, there would be some sort of a supply shock. So what is like the big conflict between Israel and Iran, or what is the reason that America has to try and isolate Iran and seemingly doesn't want it to be like, you know, to be able to freely interact with, like we treat it, I think, essentially almost like a North Korea, right?
Yeah, I guess maybe North Korea would be a little bit extreme, but, you know, in the ranks of Venezuela, in a country that we really are trying to isolate almost entirely. But as you said, as the U.S. had sanctioned not just Iran, but also Venezuela and Russia, three of the top oil producing countries in the world, the U.S. does have to let a little bit of oil kind of spill onto the market, let China buy Iranian crude oil or something like that, because it's only going to drive up the price of crude oil. And that's, you know, Russia's still going to find export partners and everything like that. And so, you know, it's really hard to counterbalance all the things that the U.S. is trying to do with its foreign policy. And so that's one of the reasons it doesn't want a complete entire embargo on Iran. But back to, you know, one of the real issues with what Israel and the U.S. have with Iran is, of course, that Israel doesn't want any states around it that could stand up to what it's doing to the Palestinians. And so if you look at what's happened in Gaza since October 7th, Israel has had to somewhat limit its military operations in Gaza due to the fact that they've had to have a lot of their military units on their northern border with Lebanon because of the Hezbollah presence there and the firing of rockets at Israel. And so that's, you know, created a problem for Israel. They want Syria to be a severely weakened state and to be a very vulnerable state. That's why they don't like Iran operating in Syria. And for years and years and years, and this is even acknowledged by the U.S. Government, that Israel has hit Iran in Syria, and that has really set back the fight against ISIS and Al-Qaeda in that country. And also, if you look at Yemen, where the Houthis are leading the charge and really maybe making the most difference against Israel and what they're trying to do in Gaza with their blockade of the Red Sea, you know, this has caused a lot of problems. So Israel just wants a lot of fragile, weak, internally feuding states around it. So, you know, for an example of Syria, where Israel seized the Golan Heights, the Syrian government hasn't been strong enough to take that territory back from Israel. And now it's essentially, even the U.S. has recognized this as Israeli sovereign territory, the Golan Heights. And so Israel wants weak states around it, not strong states. That's why they wanted to get Saddam Hussein out of power, not because it would be good for Iraq, not because it would be good for America, but because Saddam Hussein was a strong enough leader to be able to fire Scud missiles at Israel. And until the Iranian attack on Israel, that was the first time, or the last time, that another foreign country had carried out a missile attack on Israel.
Okay, so I got a two-part question for that. First is, does Iran actually care about the people of Gaza? Like, so for example, if the people of Gaza weren't there, so then let's just imagine, like, Israel was just there, there was no West Bank, there was no situation in Gaza, so then Iran would have no reason to kind of be opposing Israel, and the two would essentially get along.
So I think there's probably multiple reasons. There may be some legitimate feelings of kinship between the Iranians being Muslims and so many Islamic holy sites and so much of the Islamic, as well as all the Abrahamic faiths dating back to the region that is now Israel, but historic Palestine. And so I'm sure there is a piece of that. The relationship between Iran and the Palestinians is not that ironclad. At the beginning of the Syrian civil war, when Bashar al-Assad was really struggling to fight back against the jihadist factions, whether that was Al-Qaeda or ISIS, the Palestinians, there's a significant Palestinian community in Syria, and they threw in and took up arms in some cases with the jihadists, particularly the Yarmouk refugee camp, which is, I think, just outside of Damascus. And so this was a pretty serious issue that caused a real rift between the Al-Qassam brigades, the armed faction of Hamas, and Iran. And so it's not, Robbie, that, you know, Iran just supports Hamas and the Palestinians no matter what. They do have other interests in the region. You know, they would back Bashar al-Assad over the Palestinians, I guess, is why I'm saying, if it came down to it. And then I think there's a political reason as far as just clout in the Middle East goes, again, because there's so much important tradition in Palestine for the Muslim people, you know, across the Middle East, and that includes into Persia. There's a desire, I guess, of the population to make sure that the Palestinians aren't ethnically cleansed from the land. And so I think that probably drives the Iranian government to do this as well. Just they understand this helps their geopolitical standing in the region and their clout among the Muslim people, and particularly the Arab people.
All right, let me ask another theoretical, and maybe this just assumes too much that is not existent in our reality, that it's an unfair or ridiculous question. But sometimes, did I freeze up on you there? Did you maybe freeze up? Let's give it a second.
Who a little bit, up? But I could still hear you.
Oh, okay, cool. Sometimes I look at these situations, and to me, I feel like it's the Planet of the Apes movie, and there's a fear of other, where people think, hey, if I don't go take those people out, they're going to come attack me and take me out. And that's kind of why sometimes, you know, non-libertarians will argue for third-party monopolies of violence is because a lot of times gangs will be so afraid of the other gang, they'll initiate violence first because they think that they need to do so in order to protect themselves. So let's just imagine that, you know, like I said, let's say Palestinians don't exist, the West Bank doesn't exist, Israel's just there, and they've always been there. It's not like in 1965 or whatever they started occupying land. In my framework of it, that it's fear of other, and hey, I need to go be aggressive towards those people so that they don't strike me first. Who do you think is more wrong here? Is it that Israel feels like all these countries are coming to get me, and so therefore we have to be aggressive and we have to try and make sure that, like, you know, that they can never really establish themselves? Or do you think it's that the Arab countries actually, if they could take out Israel, hate that they're there and hate that they're on the holy site, so that, you know, if they had the power and resources to do so, they would basically evict the Jews?
I mean, I guess it's kind of hard to say, Robbie, because the Palestinian issue, I think, is really so fundamental to this that Israel wouldn't be interested in overthrowing Saddam Hussein and getting him out of Iraq, overthrowing Bashar al-Assad in Syria or Gaddafi in Libya, if it wasn't for having to cleanse or get rid of or oppress the Palestinians to a significant degree. I think Israel would be able to better get along with their neighbors because of their neighbor solidarity with the Palestinians. They now have to either weaken or take on their neighbors in order to do what Israel wants to do within, see, the borders that they control.
This is my first time having this conversation or thinking about these issues. So I want to make it clear. I'm not saying that you're wrong. Okay, I want to make that clear. I'm not saying that you're wrong. It seems very interesting to me that the other nations actually care about the Palestinian people. And the reason I say that is more just from a government and power perspective, that I seemingly, with all governments, I view them like, I don't even see the people of Iran being that caring about their own population as much as they rule over them. So it would almost seem odd to me that they would have, like, I guess, a real caring sensibility for the people of Palestine more than seeing them as whatever tool they are for whatever their actual agenda is in terms of just being able to continue to rule in their territories. Does that kind of make sense?
I guess a little bit. You know, Robbie, one thing to remember is, you know, when 9/11 happened, there were a lot of, you know, young men in Texas and California, even though New York is hundreds, if not thousands of miles away, who, you know, decided that they had to go take on the Muslim world because of this. And so,
we're talking about people, not leaders. I'm talking about leadership. I'm saying that typically speaking, the way that I view leaders and elites is that they rule over their populations and they're trying to figure out, how do we remain in power? They're just looking out for themselves. Do they sometimes have to return goods and favors to their citizens in order to remain in power? Of course. Now, you might be able to say to me, well, it's because their citizens care so much about the Palestinians, they have to play ball, and that they can't abandon them, and that it's like the optics of the same as Biden right now. I think the only reason he's not fully supporting Israel or pretending like he's not supporting them is because he's got a problem in Michigan. He's got a problem with all the Arabs in Michigan. He has to try and win that one over, so he has to try and pretend like he's not supporting it. So that I might buy, but, like, it just seems like the Arab leaders rule with such an iron fist. Like, I don't believe that. I don't know anything about Iranian politics, but it doesn't seem like they're so free there that the elected officials or the Ayatollah has to care that their citizens are going to be upset that Palestinians are being mistreated by another government. And they feel that politically they have to get involved, because otherwise, what, their people are going to overthrow them because they're not supporting other Arabs? It just seems like something that wouldn't be on the actual care list for leaders of any country.
Yeah, I guess one of the points I was trying to make is that, you know, there may be some distance between Iran and Gaza Palestinians, but, you know, there's large distances between, and so I think there's just a kinship between, you know, these groups of people being all Muslim, that makes them kind of rally around and support each other. And I think that does probably extend somewhat to the leadership, but there, you know, to some extent, this is probably like a self-fulfilling thing, right? Where to gain, you know, national support to, you know, bring the people out in the streets in support of a Muslim cause, the leadership makes a big deal out of the Palestinians. And so now it becomes a big deal for the people. And, you know, this is a 75-year long occupation of the Palestinians that we're talking about. So now it's just kind of ingrained and cultural, right? Where it kind of feeds both sides, where, you know, maybe even the leaders wouldn't be in a position to come to power if they didn't care a certain way about the issue, in part because the grassroots care so much, the people care so much about it, but it's just ingrained in kind of the culture is supporting the Palestinian resistance.
Okay. And then next question is, I remember, obviously, or it would seem that when Netanyahu has been getting up, they're always 2 years away from getting a bomb. We always got to go do something right now. And he's always holding that cartoon Wile E. Coyote bomb. And so it would seem like they've been lying about, or maybe Iran is always within a 2 month window at this point of being able to break out and get a nuke. It's just not, there's no reason for them. Like, they've gotten it basically that they're 99% of the way there. And so now they just pretend, nah, that's all for energy. And if for some reason they got to a point where they felt like they needed that weapon in order to remain in power, they could break out. I don't know. Maybe you can fill in the gaps on that. But I do remember, and I was not following the news as closely, but 10 years ago, I remember I covered this on Rob's newsroom, and I definitely had different opinions of the Middle East at that time. But seeing Iran do tests of missiles that said, like, death to Israel on it. And I remember they had that guy who is kind of a well-spoken American when I was in college, who was on CNN. And I think he had been talking about, and they took that guy's not in power there anymore. But, and I can't even remember his name. That's how uneducated I am. But I seem to recall him talking about trying to take Israel off the map. Is that, like, exist in Iran at all? Or, like, you know, or is that just entirely an Israel fabrication?
You know, there's some truth to both. I think the wipe Israel off the face of the map comment wasn't necessarily about, you know, eliminating the Jews that are in Israel, but rather restoring the Palestinians to, you know, a somewhat respectable position and, you know, making it Palestine, not necessarily calling for the ethnic cleansing of the Jews or something like that. So I think a lot of times there's a little bit of a play up whenever an Iranian leader says something, or when they say death to Israel, death to America. I mean, this is more a political slogan. I remember in the 2016 debates, Ted Cruz talked about nuking the Middle East. And so, you know, it is a part of the Iranian political spectrum, this idea that, you know, we're going to have to fight a war with Israel. But if you look at the realities of how Iran handles its business in the Middle East, the last thing they want is a war with Israel, because they understand that it means war with the United States. And I also think the last thing Israel wants is a war with Iran. They want the U.S. to fight a war with Iran.
Well, it's always good if you can get someone else to do it for you. All right. If you got a couple minutes.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons for that, Robbie, is because, you know, Iran has a substantial amount of missiles. They do not have nuclear weapons. And as you kind of mentioned there, Iran has developed something of what's called a latent nuclear deterrent, meaning they have all the pieces that they, you know, they have the ability to make the pieces they need to make a nuclear weapon, right? So if they wanted to, they could do so in a few years' time. The U.S. intelligence community, who, you know, usually I don't cite, but in this case, they're saying that Iran isn't trying to make a nuclear weapon. And so they would tend to play that up, not play that down. So I kind of do believe the U.S. intelligence community on that one. But after Trump exited the nuclear deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran, Iran started to wind up its nuclear program a little bit. And it's still all within the confines of what a civilian nuclear program is. However, they've amplified it in a way that, you know, would make it more efficient in a nuclear energy program, but would also get them closer to a nuclear weapon should they decide to start enriching uranium to weapons grade. I think when you're talking about they're 99% of the way there, I would say they're like 60% of the way there or something like that. There's still a lot of significant milestones that Iran would have to reach, including testing and detonating a nuclear weapon, which, you know, isn't as simple as we have all the pieces, we put it together and it goes boom. There is a lot of science behind that. And also, it's not clear that Iran has a missile capable of delivering a nuclear weapon. Now, Israel does have a nuclear weapon. And so the importance here is that while Iran has an overwhelming amount of missiles and could really devastate Israel, if not do enough damage to Israel, along with groups like Hezbollah, the Houthis, the Shia militias in Iraq and Syria, really make it difficult for Israeli citizens to live in Israel and maybe drive a lot of Israelis out of the country with their weapons program. And of course, Israel could end more or less the Iranian state with their 90 to 600 nuclear weapons that Iran, you know, maybe they would be able to shoot down a couple, but Israel would certainly be able to eliminate Tehran.
Within the region, are you even able to use your nuclear weapons without immediately having a problem of like fallout or radioactive material or changing weather pattern? Like, it seems I'm not good enough at the globe, nor do I know the actual information of how nuclear weapons work. I'm curious if you know, like, are those even viable weapons if you're that close to each other?
So they have a wide range of explosives on nuclear warheads. So, you know, something that could take out a small city like Hiroshima or Nagasaki, they still have those kinds of warheads. And then they go all the way up to like megaton city killers, which probably have effects on the entire globe, especially when you talk about like the devastation of a city like Tehran and how long it's going to burn, and along with the nuclear fallout. And I mean, that's going to have impacts almost everywhere. And so I'm sure Israel would, you know, assuming they get into war, sustain those environmental impacts in order to win the war. Now, when people say Israel is going to Gaza, yeah, that seems somewhat laughable. And the nuclear fallout, you know, from nuking even Hezbollah in Lebanon would probably be so significant, especially on the coastline of the Mediterranean Sea, that I don't think Israel would do something like that.
All right. Do you have 10 minutes to respond to a couple news articles? I didn't really.
Sure.
Okay, great. So first is, let me reset up our, give me one second here. There we go. That's the view I was looking for. So next up, we've got somehow they managed to pass a next round of Ukraine aid. I just like this picture in the New York Times where either this guy selfied himself or some guy was like, can someone do something so I have a better picture? But we've got out in the Ukraine, they've got, I think, what was it, $90 billion or something? They got some massive new package. In your estimation, what does this even do for Ukraine? Is this a last bit of money laundering that someone gets to shove this into their pocket before we have an election and we stop funding the war? Does this allow them to buy some materials that they can retain territories and I guess just hold the line? Does this just lead to a little, like, what does this even accomplish, you know, getting another package over there?
Yeah, it's $61 billion for Ukraine. Now, some of that goes to government salaries and everything, but a good part of that is military. Now, of course, almost all that money that's going to military aid is going to be first spent in the U.S. at the military-industrial complex. So Lockheed Martin, et cetera, are all going to be the main beneficiaries and is, you know, largely about money laundering there. Now, some people will say this will have no impact on the battlefield. It is $61 billion. And so, you know, in a very corrupt country like Ukraine, $61 billion is going to buy you a lot, including maybe even a lot of men. The problem for Ukraine, of course, is that, you know, you could maybe buy men. You can't buy trained men, you know, trained to use the NATO weapon systems they need. And they're really out of trained soldiers. And so, you know, they could use this to feed the meat grinder for a few months, you know, put a poor couple of suckers on the front lines and leave them up there to be blown up, and in that way stave off the Russian offensive a little bit. But it's not going to have, you know, any meaningful impact. It might buy Ukraine 3-6 months or something like that.
So it's just more of the same. All right, next one is... look at this. This is the ADD that we're kind of back to the Iran topic. I was reading this article, which is actually why I first wanted to reach out, where they were talking about how basically there was a shadow war between Israel and Iran, and now it's escalated. And so both sides have to figure out the rules for how they can engage in fighting each other without actually fighting each other. It's not too dissimilar to what we have basically in our war with Russia, where we can send all of the supplies over to the Ukraine to go battle Russia, but that's not considered us fighting the Russians. We're not in a war with Russia. How do you think, like, in the Israel-Iran situation, what people have been trying to say is it's been a shadow war this whole time. You get this weird gamesmanship of, I guess, Iran or Israel claims that Iran funds terrorism in the region, and then Israel kills scientists or disrupts their nuclear program, or I don't know what else Israel engages in. But, like, to me, it's just funny to get along with someone while not getting along with someone and coming up with rules for how you're going to conduct non-warfare. It's like, at that point, just get along. Like, you already figured out a framework for rules. What's, like, the next step in kind of... because they both seem to blink and walk down. It seems like America was like, you guys cannot do this war right now. Biden's like, I'm already not winning an election. I can't have oil prices going up. You're not doing this. And it seems like Israel was trying to poke at it to see if maybe they could get this war to finally happen and force America to get our backs. I don't know what just transpired over the last couple of days, but it seemed to de-escalate. What do you see as next steps here? Is it both sides secretly regrouping and hoping for 20 years down the road they get to go at it? Or do they just play some silly game, forever of just not getting along and basically pulling elaborate pranks on each other because, you know, it's the other one's the mortal enemy? Like, what does this next round look like of shadow warfare, full strikes, de-escalate, and then how do you just pretend to fight without fighting? What do you kind of see as being the framework for what this looks like for the next 5 years?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, just to go over like kind of how the what they're talking about, this shadow war has gone. And to clarify, the groups that Iran bats in the region are often the groups fighting the terrorists. Right. So the Houthis in Yemen, Assad in Syria, the Shia militias in Iraq, which are aligned with the Iraqi government that, of course, the U.S. put in power. And so, but, you know, that does put Iran against the Israelis there because Israel wants to keep those governments weak. And so that's kind of, you know, the backdrop. And what Israel has done is the former Israeli president, our prime minister, Naftali Bennett, published an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal that admitted this. They carried out a drone attack in Iran and damaged an Iranian drone facility. They assassinated the head of Iran's nuclear program, Fokherzadeh, in I believe 2021, and Iran responded to those actions by actually increasing how much they enrich uranium. And so I think it went from 3 to 5 to 20 to now they enrich a small amount of uranium to 60%, which is still below weapons grade, which is in the 90s of percent. And so that's how Iran has responded. Israel has also pretty frequently bombed Iranian targets in Syria. And there, of course, the Iranian forces are either fighting against ISIS or Al-Qaeda, or I guess also funneling and bringing some support to Hezbollah in Lebanon, which is what Israel says they really need to prevent. So that is, you know, really escalated over the past couple of weeks with the Israeli bombing of the Iranian consulate. And now I think we've seen the Israeli goal shift a little bit. It's not just to undermine what Iran is doing in Iraq or Syria or Lebanon. It's really to try to get the Iran to respond to Israel in a way that draws the U.S. into a war against Iran. Remember, both Iran and Israel don't want to fight a war against each other because they're going to destroy each other's countries. However, if the U.S. fights a war against Iran for Israel, then Israel won't be destroyed and Iran will be destroyed by the United States. And that's really what Israel is hoping to get out of this situation. Now, Iran is trying to respond to Israel in a way where they elicit enough of a punishment on Israel to make Israel not want to play this game, but at the same time, they don't go so far that they provoke a direct war with Russia. And so this is
with the U.S.
With the U.S. Sorry, Robbie. And so this is a very delicate game that they're trying to play at this point.
Got it. All right. So last thing I wanted to, and I think when I play this, you might have to go on silent so that we don't get an echo. But you can stay on until I go to press play. Did you watch any of Tucker when he was on Joe Rogan?
I did see the comment about nuclear weapons, but that's all.
Oh, so that one I didn't see. So I watched, I haven't finished yet. I probably watched an hour and a half of the 3 hours. I've got mixed opinions on Tucker. I got mixed opinions on the full episode, but this particular moment caught my eye, so I want to play the clip and then we can address it. I think you might have to go on to mute.
Members of Congress are terrified.
Are you able to hear it, by the way?
Of the intel agencies. I'm not guessing at that. They've told me that, including people on the Intel Committee, including people who run the Intel Committee, the people whose job it is to oversee and keep in line these enormous secretive agencies whose budgets we can't even know. They're black budgets. They're the parents. The agencies are the children. They're afraid of the agencies. That's not compatible with democracy. Democracy is a really simple system, even representative democracy like ours. The people rule. They do so through elections. They express their preference through voting. They send their people to the capital city to run the government on their behalf. Whenever you have unelected people who are not accountable to anyone making the biggest decisions, you don't have a democracy. You have something else, another system. I would call it a tyranny or whatever you want to call it. It's not a democracy. So that's like super obvious. It's playing out in front of everyone and no one cares and no one does anything about it. And I think the reason is because they're threatened. And if you look at the committee chairman who allow this shit to happen year after year, they're all, and I don't know, people say, oh, they're compromised or being blackmailed or whatever. I don't have evidence of that, but I know them and they all have things to hide. I know that for a fact. And so it's not a stretch of imagination to imagine that, you know, some committee chairman who's allowing warrantless spying on Americans to continue or whatever abuse they're allowing, knowing fully or hiding the truth about UAPs, ignoring the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023, like, why are they doing that? It's not impossible to imagine that some guy with a drinking problem or a weird sex life, and that's very common up there. That's why they're doing it, because they don't want to be exposed. I don't have evidence of that. I don't have proof of that.
Right.
But that's not a crazy thing to assume. That-
All right, we can pause that there. But it was basically Tucker talking about the fact that the intelligence agencies are running the show and basically have blackmail on most of the politicians, which I guess in ensures probably support for warfare or other critical agendas of the intelligence agencies. I'm sure that this is something in all of the reporting slash coverage. I'm curious to know to what extent, like, is that known, I guess, that the intelligence agencies might not just be really running the show, but I guess have dirt and be blackmailing members of like Senate or Congress.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple, you know, really easy points to make here. The first is, I believe this was in 2013 when Dianne Feinstein, who was, I believe, the chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee at the time and still had a brain, by the way, back then, had put a young man in charge of an investigation into the torture conducted under the Bush administration. Now, remember, this is under the Obama administration. And the CIA actually spied on that investigation on a senator. They spied on that investigation, and you know that was secret. And you know it's not just that that happened, that became public, and there wasn't a major, repercussions for the CIA, right? They did it. It became public and they essentially got away with it. The Senate still didn't reveal the full torture report and only gave a small executive summary to the people of, you know, really what happened there. And then the other thing is, and this is some really good work that's done by communists, where they track the number of former intelligence agencies officials who are now members of Congress. If you look at the World Socialist website, you could find this. And I think it's up to 26 or 30 or so, like 50 or plus members of Congress every year run our former like CIA, Navy intelligence, defense intelligence, NSA or something like that. And so now a significant number of these people are members of Congress. And if you look at who are members of Congress, right, they're all either really stupid, like the Fettermans, the AOCs, the Blobarts of the world, all these people who just, you know, you could imagine could be convinced by anything with like a nice PowerPoint presentation, a suit and a laser pointer to, you know, go, oh, look at this scary thing over here. And then the rest of them, and I'm sure there's, you know, sexual freaks in that category. Well, obviously there's sexual freaks in that category, but I'm sure, you know, most of the rest of them, there are people who have embarrassing, you know, sex things, who's, you know, maybe it's not even them, but like their wife had an affair. And do you really want to, are you going to cover that up? Are you going to make it public that you're a cuck? Like there's all these things that the CIA or all these agencies can hold against members of Congress. And I'm not sure what the House Speaker Mike Johnson is into, but it must be something fairly kinky because that guy was against Section 702 of the FISA Act. He was against providing more military aid to Ukraine. He was for more military aid to Israel, but still, you know, he had major flip-flops on these issues. He said no more aid to Ukraine without border security. And here he is passing all the Ukraine aid with none of the border security. Although one interesting thing, Robbie, is the new FISA, the reauthorization they did for 2 years does include a provision that says if they're using FISA against members of Congress, they have to inform them.
I was watching a Zero Hedge interview, or no, it was one of the debates, and Ron Johnson made this interesting comment where he said, I don't think that the intelligence agencies are working in the best interest of the American people. And this is not a direct quote, and I watched it a month ago, so you're getting my rehashing of it. And he said that, and I say that as sitting as the head or the chair or on the Senate Intel Committee. And then he also got into a very interesting thing with the military-industrial complex that we spend like, I don't know, $4 a bullet when Russia's spending like $1 a bullet, or just that they're, because of our military-industrial complex, we have to spend so much more on the exact same stuff, which is partly what makes this such an unwinnable war. I wonder if in this new internet age where, you know, during COVID, they did a great job of really getting information off of the internet. But I don't know. What would be like the steps to actually overhaul the intelligence agencies to maybe claw back some of that power, or maybe at, because I mean, the FBI couldn't have more overstepped in basically what they did to the Donald Trump campaign, right? We saw that. But like, is there any like pathway forward to actually exposing this and the American people becoming aware of it and it being reduced? Or I don't know. Is it like they're as implemented into American society as the Fed, where it's like, good luck uprooting that monster?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of good luck uprooting that monster. Also, I mean, I feel like you're trying to get me in trouble here, Robbie, talking about ways to take down the CIA.
Oh, no,
I won't go through too much of that. I mean, you know, Congress can pass new laws, try to reinforce the Fourth Amendment. You know, I think we just have to stay ahead of the government with technology, especially with, you know, the kinds of censorship, stuff like that. There's always going to be ways to get around censorship, you know, even in countries that have extreme rules on internet or censorship, like China, stuff like that. Like people still can get access to the real internet. They can still, you know, learn information the government doesn't want them to learn. But yeah, it's very scary. It's a very large monster. And, you know, no matter how many times they get exposed, in 2013, I believe it was James Clapper, the head of the CIA, you know, told Congress there was no mass surveillance program. Edward Snowden comes out, exposes the mass surveillance program, and we're sitting here a decade later. Everybody knows about it. Everybody knows they lied about it. And now it's just what we have to do to keep everyone safe. And what are you going to do about it, Robbie? Let another 9/11 happen? Come on, man. We got to keep everyone safe. That's all we're trying to do, is keep everyone safe. Meanwhile, they, you know, slip a congressman a photo of, you know, him doing something nasty in a dirty, you know, orgy sets club somewhere in D.C.
You know what? Maybe they just got to teach people. If you get into Congress or the Senate, I say that, you know, I have friends that do better on the Tinders or otherwise, but I find sex is not that available. And certainly I don't have any really, I like pretty vanilla sex, but I can only imagine if you're trying to negotiate like weird stuff, how unavailable that is. So if all of a sudden you're in Senate and Congress and the guy who used to work for the NSA is the, you know, is the congressman who wants to hang out with you and is bringing you to these places where all sorts of things are now readily available, maybe you got to figure out how to say no.
Yeah, I think you maybe miss human psychology, Robbie. I think the kinky people are willing to have sex with like more and everyone. And so once you go down that path, that's, you know, the way where,
well, I'm too selective.
They're just having sex all the time. Right, right. If you're willing to put on a dog costume or something like that, I'm sure you could find a group of people almost anywhere in New York City to have sex with you. Now, it is interesting, right, yeah, that the CIA promoted all this woke stuff, and it may undermine the information they have on everyone. And maybe that's what we should just push for, right? Like all these kinks are just allowed and natural and everything. And then our members of Congress,
it gets harder to shame them.
Right. Right.
All right. Before I let you go, is firstly, I give you the floor for any closing remarks and to plug anything you'd like.
I mean, I don't have anything. Thanks for having me back, Robbie. It's always a good time talking with you. I at @KyleAnslone_ on Twitter. I recently added a whole bunch of followers because, you know, your co-host on Part of the Problem, Dave Smith, gave me a big shout out on his Zero Hedge tweet performance, where he absolutely stomped those two pro-Israeli goons. That was absolutely fantastic to watch. And so if you don't already follow me on Twitter, and happy to be on the show, Robbie. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Mr. Kyle. And I'm gonna let you go here, and then we're going to cover a couple more topics. This was more scattered than our usual episode, but brought to you by sheathunderwear.com. If you're getting into weird sexual fetishes and you need to look good in your underwear, why not get the panties for men? Sheathunderwear.com. I'm sure this is the kind of programming Robert loves being affiliated with. Sheathunderwear.com, promo code RYM. If you want to get yourself invited to the kinky sex parties and you need to take sexy pictures of yourself in your underwear with your junk looking nice, there's nothing better than sheathunderwear.com. Or if you're just looking to exercise and have everything cool, calm, and separated, sheathunderwear.com. Use promo card RYM. You get yourself 20% off the greatest underwear that's ever graced the balls of man. All right. I did skip quite a few things here that I wanted to discuss, but the only one, we'll leave the rest for the leftover show that doesn't quite yet exist. Oh, you know what? Let's play this clip from Kennedy, and then I want to talk about the Supreme Court case today that is taking a look at whether or not cities and states are allowed to enforce policies against the homeless. Before we do so, let's take a couple comments. That's the thrill of the live show. Jeff Gordon's mom, our House of Reps waving Ukraine flags, is telling who they are working for, military industrial complex. Eric Shaver, but it still shouldn't go to Ukraine. Danny G, hilarious. I wish I knew which comment was hilarious. Big Biz likes likes sex through a hole in a sheet. That's an old school comment. And then Anna Rica coming through that I'm actually not enough of a degenerate. Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Here, let's go up in the comments a little bit, because I think there was some debate going on about whether or not Iran was looking to become the green energy capital of the world, with Eric Shaver saying, what's next for Iran? Windmills? Good point. I guess they got enough oil. Why do they need the nuclear program? And then we'll take one more from David Allen. Non-Muslims must be subservient in Muslim land. All that ever was Muslim is Muslim land. I don't know what that means either. All right. I saw this clip by RFK, and while I understood what he was saying, this somewhat creeped me out, and maybe you guys will think that my takeaway of this is 100% wrong, but let's play the clip.
I'm gonna put the entire U.S. budget on blockchain so that every American can look at every budget item in the entire budget anytime they want, 24 hours a day. $300 million eyeballs on our budget. And if somebody is spending $16,000 for a toilet seat, everybody's going to know about it.
Firstly, $16,000 for a toilet seat. Does that thing lick my asshole? What does a $16,000 toilet seat do? But if the entire federal budget went onto a blockchain, doesn't that sound like it would be a framework for a central bank digital currency? Can you envision a new spending protocol where all of the government expenditures are actually tracked on a blockchain and ours are not as well? That seems to me, and I might be reading into this, Kennedy might be flipping the script and going, oh, wow, that central bank digital currency was actually a pretty good idea. If we could see every single expense on a blockchain, we could actually do that to the government. And that would be a pretty quick reform to actually monitor what the government's doing. And that might be a great tool for actually keeping government spending in check. Like, people have worked in offices where all of a sudden the perks just start going away. The company's not making as much money, or maybe the company goes public. I've never personally had this experience, but you can envision that sometimes you're on a gravy train and the gravy train actually comes to an end. And it's because people started monitoring what was going on and the gravy train's over. And you're like, shit, those were the good times. Remember when we used to get those bonuses? Remember when they used to all take us to the ball game? Remember when we used to have those Thursday parties? Remember when they used to bring the kegs in here? So that could be a brilliant idea for how we could quickly reform government, where we wouldn't have to start just auditing this, that, or the next thing. We could actually create a public record of all the expenditures. I can't envision us moving over to a system like that that didn't also include us being tracked as well. All right, last thing I want to cover for today. And now we're moving backwards here. We're skipping the NPR story and we're going to cities and towns seek justices help evicting the homeless. So Supreme Court is hearing a case today. And I thought this was interesting because essentially they are arguing that policing or trying to remove homeless people from public areas is a violation of cruel and unusual punishment. Now, to me, there's something backwards about that because you're not actually like punishing. Like, I'm not taking someone who had done something and then punishing them, right? You didn't commit a crime and now I'm hanging you by your feet and dripping hot oil onto your feet and tickling you till you pee in public. It's not exactly me punishing you as much as I'm taking a policy stance that you're not allowed to do something that happens to create a problem for you because you are homeless. Now, it's one of these horrible things where I think we can all kind of see both sides of it. In that, like, if you are homeless, which can be, listen, there could be, there's definitely homeless people that have mental illness. And then I've even had friends, you break up with your girlfriend. I don't know, you lose your job. There are situations where, and by the way, sometimes in part, that's like, at least you are ingrained enough in society where you got some resources of a friend who will let you crash for a period of time, someone who will lend you the money to be in a part, like things that can get you back on your feet. But we can all understand that I guess some people can end up in a really harsh situation and you wouldn't want to be like, hey, you can't even exist. Or like I've even had where, you know, there's just, you just, I don't know, you want to sleep in your car for a night because you're driving whatever. And like, there's no place to pull over in the town and sleep. I've never really had this. I've slept in my car once in New York City. So I was too drunk to drive home once. I've had instances where you wonder if, like, even at a rest stop, how long you can, I guess, be there for. So on the one side, I can understand, hey, if you're homeless, what do you, you can't be anywhere. How's that? Like, what, you got to check yourself into a jail? You got to knock on the jail and be like, hey, I'm not allowed to be anywhere. So will they even let you into the jail? Like, at some point, where are you supposed to go and what are you supposed to do? But on the same note, none of us want a homeless person right in front of our homes. None of us do. It doesn't make sense for you. You've purchased your home. The government owns, in some instances, the road in front of your home. If a homeless guy set up a tent literally right in front of your house and you got kids, you're not going to allow for it because it creates a dangerous situation for you and your family. And it also erodes your major investment, which is in your house. Downtown areas aren't that much different. If I rent a store in downtown and now all of a sudden there's homeless people in front of my store and no one wants to come to my store, you've just ruined my business. Or if I own the buildings in a downtown area and it goes from a nice, clean, downtown safe area to basically the government not doing its part to keep the area, like, we're kind of business partners here. I'm going to pay taxes. I'm going to run my business. And we're going to do it in downtown, and that's going to make this a good downtown, and you're going to do your part that it's not unsafe and not clean. And the reality of some homeless people, not all homeless people, is that some of them are on drugs or some of them are crazy and create an unsafe environment. So the idea that you have to just let them exist in front of someone's business or in downtown areas, that doesn't seem to make sense. My guess is that it's going to come down to an almost, this doesn't really work in, like, in either direction, is that if there's places available for them to go, then you're allowed to kick them out of the areas that you've designated as that they can't go. But then what becomes an area that was designated as for them to be? Like, at what point, I mean, there's massive amounts of federal land. So the idea that we can't designate areas, I mean, like, I don't know. There's got to be places in the woods that you can just go camp in the woods and no one's going to bother you. And I'm not saying at what point does there need to be access to not just being stuck in the woods so that you can at least buy stuff for yourself or try and get yourself cleaned up and you try and go and get yourself a job. But I think the idea that you're not really, if you create a policy to keep a town safe, such as you can't sleep on the street at night, like that's just something that everyone agrees on. That's not a punishment. That's in my head, I don't think that's a punishment. Like, I don't know. If you create a policy, you're not allowed to pee in the street. It's not a punishment. I mean, it sucks. New York City, sometimes it's not that easy. You know, you've been trying it. You just spent 2 hours in your car. You're trying to find a place to park. But like, I don't know. It seems odd to declare that enforcing that someone can't be on a street at night is actually punishing the person by having and enforcing the policy. Maybe you guys are like, whoa, how anti-libertarian is this? That all of a sudden I'm for government policies and that people aren't just allowed to be on streets. All right, that's our episode. I feel like we explored a bunch of topics. We didn't come to any conclusions and we had a good time doing it. Guys, that's the episode. Back probably on Wednesday. I really want to get back to just Mondays and Wednesdays. You know, sometimes I seesaw in my head where I'm like, I don't want to do an episode unless everything, every little line is well-researched, it's thought out, there's a joke for everything. And then other times I'm like, let's just have a regular schedule, let the freak flag fly. And if it's not all put together, so be it. Which I'm now leaning more towards that. I feel like since December, it's been very well-structured episodes of just when I felt like I had enough to go live. Now I think I want to go back the other way of I'm thinking Mondays and Wednesdays, 12 p.m. no matter what. And then Fridays, once I actually figure out the back end for the leftover call-in show. But who knows? I got ADD in 10 minutes. I might change my mind on that again. All right, let's take a couple comments and then that's our episode. Eric Shaver, they could put all those government housing in the outskirts. Don't hate it. Big Biz, I would rather see homeless people over protesters sitting in the middle of the road. That one, to me, the protesters sitting in the middle of the road, it's as simple as if you got to kind of create what the law is of how that's supposed to be handled. So if people on the road are considered like a hazard in the road, or that they don't belong in the road, or that you're you don't have an obligation to stop for people who are in the road, or that they've endangered themselves by putting themselves into the road. If you were to create literally signs on the highway, like the same way that there's a, like, trespassers will be shot, people in the road will be run over, I feel like that problem just goes away. You know what I mean? How many times are people going to get into, like, and that's, listen, then you're a crazy person. You're suiciding yourself. If we make the law, hey, if you go and block traffic, people have the legal right to run you over, I feel like that's the end of that, because that's no longer a way that you even think, hey, I'm going to go protest, because you just know I'm going to go die. And you might as well go light yourself on fire. You might as well be the guy that lights himself on fire. It's the fact that we don't really empower citizens. And then, like, also with all the resources of government, get the parachute team, get the Navy SEALs parachute team, that if people are putting themselves on the road, those people are there within 3 minutes, like emergency services. How does that happen for long periods of time? If you just think about emergency services and like where's the equivalent of an ambulance, but for people that are in the middle of the road, to just clear them out instantly. Here's what I think would be, because I've thought about this, what I would do in that situation. I don't know that I'm not actually that physically tough or imposing, but what people should start doing is we should all keep duct tape in our cars. And if you confront that situation, like, we almost need, you know, like the way people take like CPR classes. And then this is the problem with our society, is I've heard this, I don't know if this is true, but that then you have liability. And so maybe you don't, like, that's a problem sometimes in emergency situations, is that you would like to try and help, but then you're also concerned about the liability for helping. So you need clear laws. But what we need is to train average Americans with, like, not even jujitsu, because most of the people that get into the road, they're a bunch of thin pussies. Sometimes they're these little weak liberal people. You don't have like NCAA wrestling people are getting into the middle of the road. We need to, like, start taking classes in an area that this happens, and you keep duct tape and rope in your car, and then you just, like, duct tape them onto the side of the road so that they can't, because that's the problem, is that you get out of your car, you pull them out of the road, and then they get right back in. You pull them back in. And then what are you gonna do? You're gonna beat the guy up so that he doesn't get back into the road, and then you're in trouble for beating the guy up. And, like, we can't function with people just getting into the road. And then it's also funny when you go and block the road, because you're probably just blocking other, like, especially if you're in a liberal area, so you're blocking some liberal person who either has to go to work, get back to their kids, or otherwise, like, how does this help your agenda if you're not specifically, like, you'd have to go to another area and, I guess, target people of different opinions. So anyways, that's one's a solvable one. They just need clear laws. The same way as I think the hoarder problem just needs clearer laws and very severe penalties for fabricating lease agreements that are phony. All right. Big Biz, I would rather see homeless people over pro. Oh, yeah, I just read that. One senior Rex extraordinaire. What makes bad choices? The other is delusional, and the last one has no brain. Decide the order for yourself. David Allen, how about a rule? Don't be obviously homeless, like the tranny thing, at least pass. Yeah, you know, that one's interesting, where it's like, but then the problem is, how do you punish, or what do you do for the genuinely mentally ill? Which it could be that to the extent that we almost allow for homelessness, people fall more into that lifestyle. And so maybe they become progressively more mentally ill, or to the extent that you can fall into that lifestyle, you might end up more of a drug addict or more of a drunk. I don't know. There's something to be said for the freedom of, like, if you want to drop out from life, being able to do so. I don't know, but I get what you're saying, where it's like a don't ask, don't tell type thing. Where it's like, if I can't, like, you have, there's a reasonable standard of that you can be homeless as long as you're not intruding on other people. And so I don't know, if you're clean cut or you're keeping your tent in an area where it legitimately doesn't bother someone, we don't need detectives out in the world going to find people to see if you are homeless. But it's a little bit like what I was joking about with the Israel thing. It's like, if you've already found a fabric to get along, can't you get along? And so the guy who can actually figure out how to be responsibly homeless, that guy probably isn't homeless. Danny G giving me applaud. Senior extraordinaire complimenting my penis size. Danny G, great episode. Thank you, sir. Big Biz, in Florida, they have a Baker Act, which puts people in mental hospital if they're a danger to themselves or others. All right, last couple of comments. Little weak liberal people, LOL. Jeff Gordon, losers, LP. Oh, shoot, very late here. You're still welcome. Danny G, duct tape, the cure to all life's problems. That's true. Listen, I don't know hammers, nails, screwdrivers, but you want to go look at my car right now. I got a mirror that's on because I duct taped it back on. Let me tell you, you go back, you watch the Rob's newsroom, that entire infrastructure is duct tape. Like behind the camera, that is all being held together by duct tape. I don't know why I went to some expensive private school and we played hockey, and I don't know why they couldn't afford nets, but before every single game, we had to duct tape those nets back together so that we could play hockey against other schools. I don't really know why. That it, like, I look back on that, hockey nets are $50, and my school tuition was what you guys probably paid for your public school. I mean, your college tuition. It's insane what my parents spent for my yeshiva education that I just didn't show up to school for. But amidst the things that were insane about that place. But you know what I learned about is how to fix things with duct tape. And the other day I was driving back from the airport and some drunk traffic cone jumped right in front of my mirror and took it clean off my car. I was driving in the right lane, officer, and that traffic cone decided to come into the lane. Did I swerve? Did I fall asleep? I don't know what happened to my mirror. As far as I'm concerned, someone needs to take care of this drunk traffic cone problem that's taken off car mirrors. But at the moment, I have a duct taped on mirror on my pull me over mobile. So yes, duct tape is the solution to all of the problems. And someone should let Boeing know that, because they could probably be avoiding all these issues with their car doors. All right, that's our episode. Back shortly with a new episode. If you're doing the Passover thing, enjoy your wines and try not to get into arguments about Israel with your family. All right, later, everybody.